Just Love on the Catholic Channel,
Sirius XM 129.
The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love, our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world through the perspective of our Catholic values. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Tom Dobbins is with us, as is Mark Quisha. And we look at what's going on through that perspective of our Catholic teaching, not just as mere observers, and how do we make the world more just? How do we make it more compassionate? Well, my favorite holiday is coming up, Thanksgiving. Now, I say that with full recognition that I'm not putting aside Christmas and Easter. Those are my favorite religious holidays. Mm-hmm. And actually, depending on the year, I either like Christmas or I like Easter better. I can't, you know, some years I like Christmas, some years I like Easter, you know. Every year I like Thanksgiving. It's just my favorite holiday of the year. I know we usually ask about this, and I am very boring when it comes to our Thanksgiving traditions. Mm-hmm. For the past probably 30 years or so, I've done exactly the same thing on Thanksgiving. You know, and I'm with my cousins. As most of you know, I don't have any brothers or sisters. So my cousins are my closest relatives. And I've spent Thanksgiving with them for the past, I can't remember, 30 years or so. So anyway, but Tom, tell me a little bit, what are your plans for this Thanksgiving?
Sure, Monsignor. And that's wonderful. You have the same. I think Thanksgiving should be about tradition. So I think it's great you've been with your cousins for the past 30 years. Our Thanksgiving bounces around once here. You know, we gain people, we lose people, depending on how people's family situations are. But this year we're going to do, we're probably going to go to the restaurant again this year. We've kind of come to the understanding that, you know, we're, well, it's either between my father either doesn't want to cook anymore, but doesn't want to tell us he doesn't want to cook anymore.
Okay. All right.
Or it's just like, or maybe it just is like, you know, because he doesn't want help in the kitchen, but you know, you can also tell he gets a little frustrated. So we're going to go to the restaurant again. And we found this great Italian restaurant in the town my folks live in, that we go to. So it'll probably be my mom, my dad, myself, my brother may join us. And it's possible I may have some friends join us too, who may not be able to get to their families for Thanksgiving. So we may be a little larger this year. So we're still in the process of figuring it out. But we really do enjoy it, and it's a little less onerous. We don't have the cooking, and we don't have the dishes to clean up after. So
I have to ask though, and I probably have asked this before, but it's an Italian restaurant.
Yes.
But do they do turkey?
Yes, very wonderful turkey. Okay. And they actually make the stuffing the way I like the stuffing very much, because what they do is they put sausage in the stuffing, which makes it really good. And so, but it's funny because I don't know that my dad appreciates the sausage in the stuffing, but my mom and I very much like the sausage in the stuffing.
Okay.
So
your dad, who is absolutely wonderful, I've known for many, many years. He's just absolutely wonderful. But when it comes to food and eating, he certainly has some clear preferences.
Very clear. I think that's right, Monsieur. I think my father feels like, my father would put apples in the stuffing And like he would put raisins. So in other words, I think, but he feels, I don't think he feels that sausage belongs in the stuffing. He's very particular about that. So I just think he has very, very clear feelings about food. So yes, I think that's a very accurate statement, Monsieur. So I think he's probably going to take the leftover turkey from the restaurant and he's going to bring it back because he actually he's buying the carcass. So what happens is the restaurant gives us the turkey bones and then he makes his turkey leftovers and turkey soup from that. And I think he's going to make his own stuffing at home on Friday. That's what I think.
All right. He's going to do too. Okay. I get it. So he likes the raisins and he likes the, what was the other thing you mentioned?
Apples and raisins. Cause that makes it moist. So he'll put that into the stuffing. Yes. So
but not the sausage,
not the sausage. No.
Okay.
I think he feels that's just mixing metaphors or something.
A little bit too much. So,
yeah, exactly.
So I, for the past few years, one of my contributions that I bring to the, to Thanksgiving is I bring cranberries.
Oh, very nice.
And cranberries are the easiest thing in the whole world to make. I mean, they are just so easy. So I make cranberries. But I also do something else. So, and I have this very simple recipe for rolls. Very simple. Mm-hmm. But this year, I've added a little bit of a wrinkle to it because I was kind of looking up some recipes and things, and I've added a little pumpkin and a little bit of cran raisin. So we have a little bit of a different take on it. So
nice.
We'll see whether it gets approved. But that's what I'm going to be doing.
Oh, that sounds nice. That sounds fun.
So we'll see if they go over, they don't go over, but you know, we'll see about that. So anyway, and actually, you know, Tom, last week we had Taina on as our guest from Potts.
Yes.
What I have done for the past number of years is I've usually have stopped up at their program because they do a wonderful meal, sit down meal for hundreds of individuals on there with tremendous cooperation. Actually, it's done by one of the parishes of the Archdiocese in Westchester, in Rye.
Oh, nice.
They do the volunteers, they do the cooking, they do the serving. And so I usually stop there to kind of say hello to the people there. And so I may do that. I probably will do that again this year. So
nice, mister.
Yeah. So anyway, so Tom, why don't we go to our first guest? Our first guest is Nicholas Vaselli, who is the artistic director of Theater Breaking Through Barriers. And I won't say a lot about that, but I'll let Nicholas speak to us about that. Nicholas Vaselli, thanks so much for joining us today on Just Love. Nicholas, why don't you take yourself off mute so our listeners can hear you?
I apologize for that. I thought I hit it, but it's such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me today, Monsignor. It's such an honor.
Oh, I am delighted. I'm absolutely delighted. So rather than me do it, why don't you tell us about what Theater Breaking Through Barriers is?
Wow. Well, Theater Breaking Through Barriers is, it's actually New York City's only off-Broadway theater company, and really one of only a handful of companies, I think, in the country that is expressly dedicated to celebrating and advancing the work of professional artists with disabilities. The company was founded in 1979. We originally started as an organization called Theater by the Blind, working primarily with blind and low vision artists. And then in 2004, we officially started working with Actors Equity Association, working on an off-Broadway contract. And then in 2008, we expanded our mission to include artists with all types of abilities and disabilities. the goal of the company, while of course it's very important that we want to provide opportunities for artists with disabilities, it's really our work is really more about trying to shift perceptions of what disability is in our world today, and to reduce the stigma, and to demonstrate that disability, having a disability is a human characteristic. That's really all it is. And that having a disability does not diminish the quality or the integrity of the art we create or of the artists who create it.
So let me ask you a very, concrete question. So are is the theater, the performances that you put on, are all of the artists with disabilities?
No, we're actually, and it was this way from the outset, an integrated organization, integrating disabled artists and non-disabled artists. I would say that in any given production, it is usually there's usually more disabled artists than non-disabled artists. At the very least, it's usually like 50-50, but it's never less than that. The reason for that was because we want to be able to showcase and demonstrate the artists as artists, and not to focus on the disabilities of our artists. So creating what we would consider professional or mainstream art for our audiences is really the general goal of the work that we create.
So, Nicholas, tell our listeners a little bit, how did you get involved in this? Tell them a little bit of your background. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? And how'd you kind of move in this direction?
Oh my goodness. Well, I actually grew up. I was born and raised in Scranton, Pennsylvania. I had it was we had a pretty average size family. There was my parents and my brother and my two sisters and myself. I always loved theater and film and all of and sort of entertainment. I don't know what sort of drew me to that. I always considered myself to be kind of a shy and quiet kid, but I guess it became a way to express yourself in that regard. I came to New York here in well, officially in 1991 is when I settled. I knew about this theater company as early as 1988, however, because we were doing a production. A very interesting story of we were doing a production of Julius Caesar that was being directed by Richard Harris in Scranton. And there was an actor who came in from New York to be in that production, and this actor was blind, and he became a very good friend of mine. And he had mentioned that he in the spring of that year he was doing a production in New York, and he invited us to come and see it. So that was the first time I actually saw a TBTB production. It was in the spring of 1988, and I was really blown away by it because the quality of the work was so outstanding. And this was a the play was a murder mystery. It was a Agatha Christie murder mystery, and it's a cast of nine. Six of the nine actors were blind or low vision, and yet they moved around the stage. Well, how should I say this? The actors who were blind played sighted. Now, you know of actors who win awards who are sighted who play blind, but how often do you actually have the opportunity to meet artists who are blind who play sighted? That to me seems a little bit more challenging. And yet it was effortless for them. I wouldn't say effortless,
So
but
let me ask you a very kind of naive question from me is, and I hope I don't mean this with any disrespect, but
No.
if I went to that play and I didn't know anything, would I know who was blind on the stage and who was not?
Probably not. And you know, it's not a question that you're asking the actors to pretend or to say or to deny the disability. That's not really the point. The point is for the artists to demonstrate that the fact that they can't see in that particular case did not diminish their quality or their the integrity or their ability to play a role that was written for a sighted individual.
Well, let me follow it up in this way. Is every actor is playing a part. So they're not, when they're on stage, they're not quote unquote themselves.
Correct.
They're the character. So if they're playing a sighted person, you should see them as the from the audience as a sighted person.
That's right. Yes.
And
And
if you don't, they're probably not that good an actor.
Well, I think the goal, see, the problem, I think there's a fundamental idea here that there is, that the perception of disability has been sort of it has been hardwired into us since forever. And it is always a negative perception. I had mentioned the other day that when I tell people that I run a theater company that works with disabled artists, I see the light change in their eyes, and I sort of see, oh, that's wonderful. You do such wonderful work, and I say, well, have you seen it? Because if you have seen it, if you haven't seen it, then how do you know it's wonderful? It's really not. It's not just people automatically tend to think, they tend to default to the worst case scenario. They think that you're dealing with people who just don't have the
Ability,
or
ability.
yeah or the or the facility to be able to create impactful art. And that is what needs to change, I think, in our world.
Do you have a resident theater?
We actually, I wish we owned our own space. We in New York, that always becomes, I think, more of a handicap than because it's very expensive. We primarily do all of our work here in Midtown Manhattan, out of Theater Row, which is right on 42nd Street. In fact, that's where our office is, where I'm talking to you right now.
So did I don't know. I may have you done an interview or the theater on stage?
We have never been on stage. We've been on stage, but we've never been on the show on stage. We've been trying. I like to think of New York. I like to think of our company in so many ways as one of New York's best kept secrets. We've been this is our 46th season as a theater company, and we've been doing work really sort of in many ways pioneering work for artists and audiences with disabilities. For all this time, and yet you're just now starting to see more opportunities being given to artists with disabilities than ever
Well,
before.
I think you should. I'm sorry. I think you should be on the show on stage. I'm gonna push you guys to get some airtime on stage because I actually love the show. I think it does a it's really upbeat and I think it provides a nice perspective. You guys should be on it.
Well,
So
thank you.
I'm
That's a
gonna
compliment
lobby
from your
them for.
mouth.
So you talked about some things. You've been doing this for quite a while, right? You've been the artistic director for almost a decade, right?
Yes, and I've been a company member. I actually joined the company in 1997 as an actor, and also doing some design work, some sound design, and also then travel coordination. So I've been with the company for, since 97.
Great. So tell me what, give me, tell me some of your best experiences. Like what's one of them or a couple of them that really stand out in your mind?
That's such a good question because there's so many of them. I think what drew me to this company in the first place, again, as I said, I moved to New York in 1991, and was getting work here and there as an actor. But when I started working with this company officially, what I loved about it was this real sense of a community, a tight group of artists, and it really became my like a second family to me. And because the artists, all the people that were working in the organization, were so dedicated to the work and creating good work. It wasn't just it just felt like a very close-knit and tight group. And the work that we did because of that, it reflected. The work just got better and better through that experience. I think individual experiences, oh my goodness, we do a lot of work that has, even though we have artists with all types of disabilities, we don't really do work that's exclusively about disability. That's very important because we want to change the perceptions. We don't want to just sort of lock ourselves into one box and into that. So a lot of the work we do everything from Shakespeare to Shaw to, oh my goodness, Gorky to contemporary plays, murder mysteries. We did in 2024 a revival of a Neil Simon play called Out of Being Pictures. And yet at the same time, we also develop a lot of new plays too. Not so much developing plays, again, about disability, but trying to get writers to write for our artists as the artist, not so much as the artist with the disability. Although that might be part of it, it's not necessarily integral to whatever they create.
We're speaking with Nicholas Vaselli, who is the artistic director of Theater Breaking Through Barriers. Nicholas, you mentioned, and this is in light of raising awareness with our listeners, you mentioned blind, and that this theater company kind of began maybe focusing on those with visual limitations, et cetera. But maybe for our listeners, are there some disabilities that maybe I might think or a listener might say, oh, that person could never be an actor or an actor oh, with that disability, it's impossible. Are there, give us a little bit of the range of disabilities that the actors have tremendous abilities to be actors that we might not think they have the ability or facility to do.
Oh my goodness. I think I've learned through my experience that I always like to say as art makers, we have this great privilege and ability to be able to create a world on stage that is all our own. We can make it whatever we want it to be.
Right.
Because of that, anything is possible, and that to me is very important. We have artists in our organization with the, who are blind, low vision, deaf, hard of hearing. Obviously, artists with mobility disabilities, wheelchair users, amputees, congenital amputees, artists who have sort of they are neurodivergent, all types of neurodivergence. I don't. I think. The only li you know the only limits we set are our own are in our own mind and in our own imagination. The ability to convey humanity and human emotion is it doesn't matter whether you have an ability or whether you have a disability or not. And it's just finding the right way to express that, the right vehicle to express that. And I think the willingness to explore that and the willingness to sort of say this will work, and we have to be very strong and assertive about that. If we cave into societal perceptions, then we are losing that battle. We have to be willing to say this is the story we're creating. Come with us. We're taking you on a journey, and I promise you the journey that you go on when you. When you leave the theater, you will leave a different person than the one that entered the theater. That.
Yeah, that's to me. And I mean, again, when I think about this, and I bring my own biases and prejudices. When you talked about the blind actors, I could see that. So help me walk me through how a deaf actor interacts with other actors on the stage. In dialogue, and how does that raise my awareness?
Well, I think that a lot of what we do, a lot of how we do, I should say, that is all created in our rehearsal room. Okay, so when we start our rehearsals, we know the artists that we're going to be working with,
Right.
Well, we have already discussed with them what it is they need to create their best work. So if you have actors who are deaf or hard of hearing, sometimes they require an ASL interpreter who will be in
Okay.
the room with them. And sometimes they don't. It depends on the artist. And once the initial communications have been established, once we have developed the methods with which we're all going to communicate with each other in the room, then it becomes easy because by the time we bring that to the stage, we've already worked that out. So, and we've already thought about how the audience is going to receive it so that it is not so that the audience is not missing out on something. To watch a deaf performer perform is actually wonderful because if they're using ASL as their communication, as their language, it's a very expressive language. Everything is in the face and in the body. And when we create our work, there's part of it that is what we do on stage, and then part of it is how we present it to the audience. And so we are now creating plays and doing work where the accessibility is built in. So all of our shows have open captioning. All of our shows have audio description for people who are blind, low vision. We build that into the actual production. So it's now part of the show, as opposed to an add-on, which is where most of the society is at this point.
Right. Oh, that was great. Thank you so much for that. So listen, we're approaching the kind of big holiday season. Thanksgiving is coming up, Christmas. A lot of people go to the theater. If somebody wants to go to TBTB, how do they find out about it?
Oh my goodness. Easiest and best way is always to go to our website. It's www.tbtb.org,
Right.
tbtb.org. It will list all of the events that we have planned. We have a great archives that you can look back and see a lot of the work that we've done. Past productions, as well as we do a lot of online work, which we started during the pandemic, which I think is quite exciting because it allows us to work with artists wherever they are in the world. And so, for example, next week we're starting, we do this project every year called our Playmakers Intensive, where over a very concentrated period of time, we gather a group of artists, usually in this case, 12 writers, 12 directors, because we've qu created 12 short plays and about 35 actors. And they're given a period of time to create, rehearse, and then ultimately present an original short play. Six of those plays are going to be presented online beginning Monday, the 17th, through the 22nd, one play every evening, and
Oh.
presented live. And so you can go to our website and find the link, click on the link, and then you can see the plays being performed live next week. Then on Sunday, the 23rd, we're doing the final day of our intensive, which is a live performance where we have six more plays and we'll be doing them in front of an audience. We'll also be simulcasting that 90-minute performance online as well. And that's all free of charge. So if you've never experienced our work, it's a perfect opportunity to start. And then
Well, you're doing your part for the affordability crisis that we're having in the world. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's
So
a pleasure.
Nicholas Vaselli, the artistic director of Theater Breaking Through Barriers, I am just delighted. Thank you so much for spending this time with us on Just Love, and we'll make sure we put the link to your website on ours so that those who have heard you today, they can follow up and hopefully participate and attend one of the performances.
Oh, thank you, Monsignor. Such a pleasure. I am so grateful and so thankful to you for having me. I hope that you will come to see our shows. All you have to do is say the word. I have connections. I can get you
Ah, great. Okay. Thank you, Nicholas. And you have a very, very happy and blessed Thanksgiving.
Oh, and you as well. Thank you so
Yeah,
much.
thank you. Okay. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We will take a break and we will be back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Now let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We are looking at what's going on in the world through the perspective of our Catholic social teaching, and we are coming up to Thanksgiving, my favorite holiday, not to diminish Christmas and Easter, they're my favorite religious holidays, but Thanksgiving is coming up. Time to be with family and friends, a good opportunity to kind of renew traditions or continue traditions. So it's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity that we have to do that. We talked a little bit about what people are doing for Thanksgiving. And so why don't we now go to our next guest? Our next guest is Luz Tavares, who is Vice President of Government Relations at Catholic Charities USA. Luz, thank you for being with us on Just Love. I think you may have to demute yourself.
I'm unmuted now. Sorry, Monsignor.
Great. No problem. So, listen, I obviously know a little bit of your history. But for our listeners, I mean, you've been on Just Love before, but give them a little bit. How did you kind of get involved and interested in government relations? And how did you kind of wind up making that something that you wanted to create your professional career in?
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me on the show, Monsignor Sullivan. I've always loved politics. My first campaign I completed when I was about 14 years old, and that was Ruth Messenger running for Manhattan Borough President. So I've always been interested in it. I worked for years in the state legislature. I worked in the state governor's office, Yonkers City Council, and then I pivoted. And I came to work for Catholic Charities. And for 16 years, I was able to work on Catholic Charities policy and government priorities.
And now, what is
it? And now, for the last year and a half, I've been at Catholic Charities USA, which is a national organization that represents the needs of Catholic Charities independent agencies throughout the country in Washington. And so I oversee the government relations department here.
Ah, okay. So I made a big faux pas probably about a few weeks ago when I was at a reception with the speaker of the New York, I'm sorry, the majority leader of the New York State Senate. And she was asking about you. And I said, I'm glad that that you have good fond memories, even though she worked for your opponent in your election. And I said, and you only beat him by 18 votes. She said, no, he beat me by 18 votes and I whooped him the next time. So I got the numbers. I got the numbers backwards.
Yeah. What's great about that is I have very fond memories of working for Senator Nick Spano. But I always had a very positive relationship with the majority leader, Andrew Stewart Cousins. And, I think that's something that's kind of missing in government and politics these days, the ability to reach across the aisle and have camaraderie.
So you've worked in state, you've dealt with state government relations, you now deal with federal, you also dealt with municipalities in New York City and in Yonkers. What's the difference between working at kind of a state and or local level and working at the federal level? What's the difference?
You know, there's a part of me that wants to say there's no difference, and then there's a part of me that sees many differences. At the end of the day, you know, there's a partnership between government and citizens and nonprofit organizations just trying to do good for the people we serve. I often hear you say all politics is local, which it is. And so, you know, it's really important that what we do at the local level translates into positive things at the federal level, and that what we do at the federal level trickles down and positively affects the folks that we serve.
So I think, and we, you know, we talked about this. I mean, I think in my experience is we're not in a good place when it comes to our kind of political world that we operate in. There's just, I mean, it is absolutely preposterous, it seems to me, that that government shut down for so many days, and just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I do think, I think, didn't they, remind me if I'm correct on this, didn't they do something a few years ago in New York State where when the budget was late, that the legislators didn't get paid during the period that it was late? Did they?
Yes, that's right. That's right. And there were some members of Congress that chose proactively not to receive their pay during the shutdown.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention names, but I can guarantee you those who didn't, which is nonsense in my judgment. They should have been docked paid, and there should have been punitive damages for them inability to kind of continue to keep government open. I mean, I think, but that's just preposterous. But what I wanted to do is to give you an opportunity in the midst of what I perceive to be an incredibly negative atmosphere with regard to government. Are there any things that you can give our listeners that are somewhat, maybe there's a little bit of hope or a little bit of light in what's going on?
You know, I mean, Monsignor, this is going to be, this is a little unfair of a question for you to ask, because I'm the eternal optimist.
Right.
So I always see light. You know, I mean, as a Catholic, the last thing we lose is our faith. I've had the opportunity to meet many people here who perhaps have said things that are not kind on national television. And I've had the opportunity to meet with them one-on-one, and it's a different take. And I think that there is I think people are like inherently good. And unfortunately, because they're so concerned with towing the party line, they say things that perhaps they don't believe or mean. And right. I'm not giving them a pass.
Is that what we call hypocrisy?
and by no means am I giving them a pass, Monsignor.
Right.
I guess if, you know, I don't have the benefit of losing hope in my role.
Right.
What's important to me, and what I think is really key to what I do and other folks in this position, is to just continue kind of chipping away one person at a time and trying to offer the data and the information from the field that's going to help them to change their mind. And good policy doesn't happen overnight, right? It takes time.
It does seem, though, that bad policy does.
Clearly, I'm the optimist and you're the pessimist.
No.
A good team.
I would say that I'm kind of an astute analyst of what. But anyway, So over the years that we've worked together, what are some of the, would you say, kind of the highlights of success that you've had in kind of the work you've done? What would you consider some of the successes?
I don't know that they're my successes, but I think Catholic Charities New York has been very successful because, you know, we've been able to pivot very quickly when something new happens. Right. And I mean, that's thanks to your leadership, Monsignor, the dedicated staff, you know, philanthropy and government that trust us with their monies, and a dedicated board. And so unlike, I think, other organizations, we're really able to pivot very quickly and offer services and funding for other for groups immediately when they need it.
I mean, my leadership and success was based probably about 95% on basically doing what you told me to do. So that's why it was successful. But you know what you may want to recount? Because I think one of the incidents that epitomizes what you've just said was after the deadly fire in the Bronx and the ability to work with the congressional representative from that area, Richie Torres. You want to tell our listeners about that incident?
Yeah, you know, I think because
Tell them what happened so that they know what the situation was.
Well, why don't you tell them what happened? Then I will.
Well, there was a fire right around the holidays. I think it was right around Christmas. And there were a number of deaths that were part of that fire. And I think one of the pastors in the area did begin a GoFundMe page and raised, I think, over $100,000 for that, but had no way to kind of distribute the money. And basically, Luce, you were the one who kind of stepped up to take the lead for Catholic Charities, interacting with the Congress. Was he a congressman then or a city council?
He was... Gosh, I don't remember, Monsignor, but okay. Either way, I mean, he was representing that community. That's what's most important.
Yeah.
You know, I think two things are important. One is that, you know, now Congressman Richie Torres knew that local pastor and understood that what the impact of that local parish. But the other thing is that both Congressman Torres and that local pastor understood the role that Catholic Charities could play, right? That not only were we going to meet the Catholic parishioners, but we were going to meet the needs of everyone that was being affected by that tragedy. And we did that. We formed a little committee closely with our staff in the South Bronx. And we began to meet and review cases and with the support and advice of both the pastor and the congressman, we began to share monetary support to some of those families, for some of those families, I should say.
You know, Luce, we're speaking with Luce Tavares, who is the Vice President of Government Relations for Catholic Charities USA. She also headed the Government Relations and Community Engagement Department of Catholic Charities in New York for more than a decade. You know, Luce, one of the areas that is probably among the most divisive in the country today is the issue of immigration and refugees. You, for a period of time, you headed New York State's one of their offices that dealt with citizenship under Governor Pataki. What's your reflection on the different environment when you were doing that and what's going on now? You share a little bit of that with our leaders, and you know that I will not hesitate to interrupt you if you get overly optimistic.
Got it. Okay. When Governor Pataki formed that office, he formed it because he understood the importance of the immigrant community in New York. And with an action by the federal government, he understood that fraudulent providers of immigration services were going to come out of the woodwork. And so he formed this unit first and foremost to tell people what was and what was not the benefit, right? And who could benefit from it. And so we basically traveled the entire state just letting people know, this is what the benefit is, this is what it's not. And that's difficult, Monsignor, because sometimes people want to hear something positive, and me being the bearer of good news always, I understand that. But unfortunately for many, many immigrants, undocumented immigrants, the news isn't always good. And it's a difficult message to relay, but a necessary one.
So how do you read what's going on now?
I think we've lost a little bit of compassion. I think I think many people have stopped seeing immigrants for what they are. They're people made in the image and likeness of God. They're our brothers and sisters. And I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, if I get a little bit politically analytical with regard to this, I think the current political divisiveness and the anger and the vitriol, particularly in the debate around immigration policy, can be laid at the doors of both Democrats and Republicans. I don't want to say that the blame is equal, and I don't want to say that at all. But the inability of whoever has been in power for the past 20, 30 years to come up with a solution to deal with our system gets laid at everybody's doors. And I won't go into it too much, but I mean, and you and I, we were down in Washington probably more than a decade ago when there was a potential compromise there, a bipartisan compromise, which didn't mean one person, but there were four and four who wanted to put something, and it fell apart. It just didn't happen. So, but I think, you know, the bishops of New York State just recently issued a statement, which again is a recap of what our Catholic perspective is. And I think, you know, while there can be different policy positions on how we get there, I mean, there are some things which just are completely outside of our Catholic teaching. You can't denigrate people. You can't characterize a whole class of people. You can't be vitriolic. You can't condemn a whole bunch of people, despite what you may think about policies. And I would say it certainly is against our Catholic values to have mass deportations, because that's going to negatively impact families. Now, how we secure a border, what we do with those who violate our laws, how we do that, there can be a wide variety of opinions on that. But there are some things which I think are completely outside of legitimate Catholic Christian values. So anyway, Luce, before I let you go, any other things you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, a final thought. I was chatting with a, I will not name who it is, but a high-ranking member of the House majority who, when speaking about immigration, said to me he wanted to see a method for migrant workers to come here. Right. And he wanted to ensure that when they came here, they could bring their families with them so we preserve the family unit.
Right.
I said to him, I said, you sound like a Catholic. Right. But, you know, those are the type of things that give me hope. Do we see them translated in the news? Maybe not yet, but I'm going to try to stay positive.
Would he let you post it on social media that that was his position?
Probably not.
Right. You know, so anyway, but thank you so much. And I appreciate your being here. And more importantly, I thank you for the work you're doing now and the work you've done for so many years. Thank you. You, quite frankly, you are the hope that there is in for doing this work in an incredibly compassionate and professional, high quality way. Thank you. Thanks for taking the time to being with us on Just Love.
Thank you, Monsignor. Have a great day.
Thank you. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. We'll take a break. We'll be back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Just do it. Just love. Just check out Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who's here right now. Take it away, Monsignor.
Welcome back to Just Love. We are approaching the Thanksgiving weekend, the Thanksgiving holiday, and with the subsequent weekend afterwards, a tremendous opportunity for families to get together. Sometimes it can be a little bit tense, depending on some of the family dynamics, but fortunately for most, it is a great time to kind of celebrate and come together. And so I would just like to wish to all of our listeners a very blessed, a very happy Thanksgiving. And for those families where there may be a little bit of tension, may it be an opportunity for some reconciliation, from some healing. And for those for whom it will be a incredibly upbeat, may it be a tremendously uplifting and building and creative time for your families. Thank you so much for being with us on Just Love. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and we will build a world that is more compassionate and more just. Join us again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel,
Sirius XM 129.